So we just wanted to convene this as an info sharing session among colleagues around this question of building use. I had noticed on the Facebook page for UUMA colleagues that that question had come up often. So I thought, well, let's pool our knowledge on that. Seems that during this period of time, there's more requests to use our buildings for various groups out in the community. I have seen even on the national news, people holding unofficial town halls for their congressperson in their Unitarian Universalist building in the neighborhood there, and inviting their congressman who isn't showing up. But, you know, so I thought that was an interesting use. And what do people know? What are people interested in? What are people? What are people's questions and concerns? Let's just start right there.
So I know very little. Our building is heavily in use by outside rentals and the outside community, but we have very strictly stayed away from anything political. And someone recently outside of the congregation, a liberal, asked if they could have kind of a, if they could use space for building what would eventually be their campaign. And when we said no, they said, okay, but you're making it really, because we're, I'm actually outside of Austin in an extremely conservative area. And this person said, you're making it really hard for us to get any sort of thing going. So our board is going back and questioning if our kind of hands, completely hands-off policy is the right way to go.
So what I've seen is that we have confusion between what political and partisan mean. And I've been telling people we're free to be mighty political and probably need to be, but we do need to be cautious about being partisan, because that's what the law is concerned about. Now, there may be other reasons not to be involved in some political issue, but that should be a conscious and strategic thought, something about the congregation and peace and well-being within it, not something that's...
This is John Gibbons, and I guess our situation would be quite similar. We have lots of things that would be described as political, but not as partisan. I think that there have been situations where we have rented our building to the local town Democratic Committee and probably to the local town Republican Committee, for that matter, on an equal access kind of basis. The main thing that we're dealing with right now is the decision over offering physical sanctuary for folks facing deportation, and we're likely to be making our space available for that purpose. We're voting on April 2nd, and it looks like we are quite certain to go ahead with that. We're doing it. I mean, you had expressed an interest, Tom, in how we make decisions about these kinds of things. And in this particular case, that's a congregational vote. And we will have a duly called congregational meeting for the purpose of making that decision.
Are you anticipating that people will be living in your building for an extended period of time?
I missed part of that, Tom.
Are you anticipating that people are going to be living in your building for an extended period of time?
we would be making the decision with that being a likely outcome, or at least a potential outcome. We're understanding, you know, every day of the week there's a webinar of one sort or another on sanctuary issues, and we've been talking to other congregations that have offered sanctuary, and it is rather typical to have somebody living 24/7 in the building for a period of several months.
Okay. And I'll spring off of that because the congregation I'm serving, which has until recently not been very involved in social justice at all, is at the end of the interim time starting to get much more so. But one of the conversations that is just starting is the possibility of serving as a sanctuary church, and there are particular connections with the Syrian immigrant community here in Memphis. The DRE's husband is actually one of the leaders in one of the local mosques and is also a Syrian immigrant himself, so there's a lot of interest in the possibility and worrying about the details. The building is somewhat well-suited for that. There's actually a shower in the church building, which is somewhat unusual. So it, and student groups have stayed there for doing that, and they're wondering more about what would be involved.
This is Chris. My congregation is kind of at the 101 level. We've had a lot of interest in building usage since the election. And we have a Sierra Club. I get contacted by someone every day. We have a Freethinkers AA meeting group that wants to meet in our building. We have local organizers who have their public forums at our building. And right now the board is concerned about liability insurance. We're covered to a certain extent under our church mutual policy, but I guess there is a need or a desire for outside groups to have their own coverage. And of course, if they're big, they may. And if they're small, there's no way they have that. So I'm interested in finding out more about the ins and outs of outside groups using the building and, you know, what and liability issues regarding that.
If I can just follow up on that, what do people imagine the liability issues might be around, did you say something like a Sierra Club or some other advocacy organization? What are their concerns?
I just kind of got a brief sketch of this yesterday from a board member who was doing research and talking to Church Mutual, but we're covered if we're negligent, if someone slips and falls and there's some obvious negligence. But you can still really be open to being sued by anyone who uses your building from an outside group if something happens, something really innocuous happens, you know, an innocuous injury happens to them, or if the group is using the kitchen and someone burns themselves, or Church Mutual said we weren't completely covered for any event like that held if it was held by an outside group. And again, the Sierra Club, you know, if they're not, I don't expect anyone to really be injured, you know, but then again, you never really know, you know, anything can happen. Someone can slip and fall in the bathroom or, and I'm not terribly worried about the probability of this happening, but, you know, when you have responsible people trying to make responsible decisions, you know, it's something we have to, especially when they haven't had a lot of outside building usage before, it's something we have to go through the process.
Just on the matter of liability, as I say, we're considering physical sanctuary, and I called our insurance agent, and to my complete surprise, our insurance agent loved the idea of having somebody living in the building, because that would provide even greater safety, that there would be somebody present 24 hours a day in the building, and from that insurer's perspective, and it was not Church Mutual, by the way, from that insurer's perspective, having someone in the building increased the safety of the building in a way that the insurers liked.
And I would say also that having people from outside your church using the building can really become something that you can use. Last year, I had our administrator count how many people, counting each person just once, how many people besides us use our building, and it wound up being over 5,000 a year. And so this is something that we're just repeating over and over again. And it's great for things like when we needed to repair our parking lot. Well, hey, you know, rather than saying it as 200 member church, it's, well, over 5,000 people use our building. So just a plug for the fact that once you start doing that, you can really use it in some good ways.
Oh, yeah, that's true. And for us, I mean, I have a church that's kind of been stagnating, and there's so much potential there, and all of these new people coming into our building for outside events. A number of them do show up for church on Sunday, so I am all for the building usage. So I want to find a way to get the people who are more risk-averse comfortable with the idea. And it's not that they don't want to do it at all, but they just, you know, feel being responsible, they have to point out that, you know, there's a liability issue.
I noticed we've been joined by a few new people, so why don't you introduce yourselves? And we're in the midst of a discussion about building use and questions and concerns that people who are gathered here have had, are facing coming up. Everything from using the building for sanctuary to just what's our liability issues and letting outside groups handle or use the building. So it's wide ranging, and hopefully we're just kind of working our way up to free flowing, but we'll get there soon. Rod, why don't you introduce yourself?
Hi, everybody. I'm Rod Richards, and I'm the minister here in San Luis Obispo, California. And we recently opened up our facility to a new group starting Race Matters, SLO County. So I was interested in just the topic as a whole. We want to be a space where those kinds of groups can meet and do their thing. So thanks for doing this.
We'll see. And I don't know your name, but I think we've met, so.
Hi, I'm Sarah Richards. No relation to Rod, as far as I know. I'm here in Carbondale Unitarian Fellowship, and my questions have to do with we have really tried to redo our building rental policy recently after a couple of years of not allowing any rentals because it just got so difficult to make everybody happy in terms of where we're getting problems is members who want to rent or use the space for non-fellowship activities. Should they pay or how much? And of course, now we want to, and we have made our building available for community things. But it's just so difficult to where to draw the line that's fair to everyone. And yet, our building, when I came on, someone was talking about how 1,000 people use their building, even though there is only 200 people membership, and that's a similar issue that we have. And we need to not lose money on, cleaning and upkeep, and we want to be open and available. So it's that tension, and we would even like to be able to make some money, not necessarily on these, social justice issues, but for other groups. And it's just it's a moving line. It's just tough. So, also I'm eating a very late lunch, so I'm going to put myself on mute and listen in.
Welcome.
So the political issue is one that comes up very quickly here in New Hampshire, because it's, you know, politics all the time here. And the stand that we took was simply that we rent space to political organizations on an equal basis if they are able to, you know, use our space in accordance with our policies, and we do not discount for anyone. So it's available, and we were approached by a number of people, and almost none of them could make it work, but we're not shying away from making a little bit of money from people who are trying to use the space. It does raise, you know, the wear and tear and some of the expenses of the building, but it has brought people in, and it underwrites us doing things like giving free space to Black Lives Matter and some other folks who we really do want to support.
So how do you make the determination of which groups get space and which groups pay for space?
So the good and the bad part of that here is that they don't really have a well-defined policy, and they are, at least from my perspective, unnaturally used to the idea of the minister making these decisions. So they just sort of have so far said, you know, okay, I'm waiting for the ceiling to fall in on me. But I tried to draw those lines as clearly as I could. You know, if it's a partisan political organization, then they all have the same rules, and that's how we avoid being actively partisan. We're just providing space, and here in, you know, in a state where the public spaces that are large enough for those kinds of purposes are small and few and far between in some places, they're used to the idea that there may be political meetings in a church. It doesn't traumatize people quite the way it does somewhere else. For the other organizations, it's been a question of whether it meets the church's not well-defined sense of its obligations and missions. So, for instance, we provide very low-cost space for some NA and AA groups, and have for over a quarter of a century. We're saving lives, helping them save lives. With Black Lives Matter, it had to do with the Social Justice Committee had taken on certain objectives for the year, now more than 1 year, and the UUA commitments there. And so it was in line with our social justice commitments and history. But I guess I'm not unused to operating in the gray zone. It's nice when it's black and white, but I'm trying to persuade them that they should be comfortable with things not being crisp and clear all the time. So I'm living there too.
Pat, so our church is actually extremely comfortable with having people religiously different than we are. In fact, we have like a Korean Christian church that is one of our renters. We have a tantric yoga group, you know, all kinds of stuff like that. But the political has them spooked, or excuse me, the partisan has them spooked. And specifically what they're worried about is that because if you make it open to one side, you have to make it open to all. And so we're in Texas. So, okay, what if a partisan group who is supporting SB 6, which is one of the bathroom bills, you know, what if they want to use our space? Have you run into anything like that?
Not yet. But given the legislation that we've got and the state government we've got, we could very easily be in the same place. We're only a little more purple, I think, than Texas is. But it's the partisan nature of the organization, and we haven't been looking at the content, but I would be willing to tell a group that was actively committed to legislation, which is an issue that, and they were actively in opposition, I would tell them no. This church has public commitments in and outside the congregation to the trans community. We're actively participating on their behalf. We are testifying in their behalf, and we're not discriminating against you on a partisan political basis. We're discriminating against you on the basis of an issue, a political issue that we have every right to be involved in.
So, Joanna, so are you imagining that there'd be a group that was partisan identified?
Right. I kind of...
Local Republican Committee...
Right, Tea Party.
The Tea Party against trans people.
Yeah, and yeah. I inadvertently created a straw man. So what our concern is more the local Tea Party group who happens to be supporting the bathroom bill, wants to use the space. I don't know that one group focus on one thing where I could make it really neat and clean and no, you can't use this because this goes against our religious values. I don't know that that would happen. It's more, like I said, the Tea Party wants to use our space. If they did, you know, what then?
And is the concern that they would be in your space? I mean, one of the questions I would ask at that point is it an ongoing thing or are they looking to do a one-time meeting? Those are different. If it was a one-time thing, I'd look at the board. I'd take it to the board president and maybe the whole board and say, are you willing to take their money and let them help fund you do something? Or is it there that you're concerned about being visibly associated?
I think the concern is if we allow in a liberal partisan group, then we have to let in a conservative partisan group. And I think it's the feeling of being trapped. Are we going to wind up in a situation, where we feel that we can't say no? And it's both of the things that you're talking about. It's the using the space, but it's also, okay, what if there's an article about, this group was at the local UU church. What does that say to the people that we want to be welcoming to? And what does that say about our values?
So, this is in there. I mean, this is 100% right where, you know, some of the things that happened in Worcester, you know, when I was there was, you know, I mean, very similar. I mean, we had the chairman of the Worcester County Tea Party who was a member of our congregation, so. You know, but the thing is like, here's a group that you agree with that's a liberal group and that they're actually on your door and they're asking for space. And you're saying, well, I don't think I could say yes because someday another hypothetical group that could that it's even hard to imagine that they would want to be in our space might come to the door. So we're going to turn down the real people now because we're afraid of the hypothetical people later, you know? And I mean, I understand how you can get into that position and how it can be an argument for people who are cautious in your leadership to go, well, we don't want to do this. And this is it's like one of the arguments that come up. Well, if we do it here, we're going to have to do it for the Klan someday. Or the other argument is the one that Chris is talking about is somebody goes and goes, you know, if they slip and fall, we're all going to lose our houses, you know. And, the liability issue. I mean, there's a lot of arguments that people used to be to urge their congregation to extreme caution.
For what it's worth, at another congregation I served in the past, a similar question came up to which my argument was, any partisan group we can rent to so long as we're making it clear that we are only providing rental space not giving any discounts. And yes, if a Republican group wanted to rent from us, we'd offer them the same deal as a Democratic group. Now, given how many churches are in our area are more than happy to have Republican groups and conservative groups meet, what do you think the odds of that are? For what it's worth, both of the times that came up, that shut the conversation down.
Yeah, and at one point we had a group that they were actually doing some stuff with the Bernie Sanders campaign, and we rented, and I had to on one of their event things on Facebook, I had to go to him and say, you need to say on your event that this isn't sponsored by the congregation. I mean, it was a rental. And yeah,
I think it may be useful to look at the policies of your local public library or your local schools, and whether you know they are open to those kinds of rentals. I think that, you know, in the case of the church in general, we're open to these rentals, but I also think we've got an escape clause. If there is somebody who really is anathema to our values, we're no more obligated to have them than the local Catholic Church is obligated to have a pro-choice group meet on their premises. So I have to admit that I'm in the People's Republic of Massachusetts, and there is a certain bubble here, and we're one of these churches on a town common that has a public presence that is just part of our DNA. But our building is vigorously used 7 days a week, and that's a significant source of income. I think that we raise something like $50,000 a year in outside rentals. And it just is a given that we are a meeting house for the larger community. And that's been good for the church, and I think it's been good for the community.
John, could you say something about the staffing that helps to support that $50,000 a year rental kind of stuff?
Yeah, we have a full-time parish administrator, and handling those decisions is a significant chunk of her time. And there are daily dilemmas. Today's dilemma was, here are some people that want to do a discussion group about the Course in Miracles. And, well, is this a discounted thing or not a discounted thing or a rental? And we make some distinctions between what we charge to for-profit renters versus nonprofit. We give a break to parishioners who want to rent the church for, you know, their birthday parties or whatever they want to do. So there are regular, almost daily line drawings that have to be made. But our parish administrator is full time, and she's the front line, the face of the congregation. We have an assistant parish administrator as well, who does more clerical things. I'm aware that there are churches that hire somebody exclusively for the purpose of figuring out their building rentals and how to handle those, because it is a lot of work, and you have to do a lot of hand holding and, you know, showing people, you know, how to make coffee and how does the sound system work and blah 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 blah.
What about custodial? Do you have extra custodial staff with that degree of rental?
If we are hosting a birthday party, if we have a wedding reception that is happening, we may require that the renter pay for additional custodial services. Again, there are judgment calls to be made. And if it's parishioners who we expect can clean up after themselves, well, that's one thing. But if it's people that we don't know, we will require that they hire custodial help as well. Sure, that has to be factored in. And we regularly, well, I shouldn't say regularly, because we're overdue at increasing our rates. And we try to keep in mind, again, what other community buildings rent for, and we try to have some parity with them, and the rental rates have to keep pace with whatever you need in custodial services and administration and all the rest.
John, Luke, feel free to email me. We have about a third of our income comes from rentals, and so we have a whole building use handbook. So if you want to see that, I'll be happy to email that to you.
I do want to see that, Joanna. Yeah.
Yeah. And we have a part-time administrator who does it, but I do think you have to have some kind of staff. The other thing that really helps us is we have once a quarter, we have a program council meeting, which is basically the chairs of committees. And the biggest thing that we're doing is we lay out the calendar, and people come and they put their requests for the calendar. But part of the culture here is an understanding that it is first come, first serve, no matter who you are. When the minister came here and wanted to do a hanging of the greens, sorry, you know, register for it for next year.
Sarah had a question. Do you want me to read the question, Sarah? Do others have a policy that doesn't allow for profit renters, and that renters and events must be in line with UU ethics values?
I think Rod's actually right that renting to for-profit groups does have tax ramifications. At least that when I was in a previous ministry, it certainly did. Part of our building was not tax exempt because of the way it was rented.
That tends to be something that has a lot of local jurisdiction, and how your local assessors tend to rank things. We rent our steeple to four antenna providers, and that's $100,000 worth of annual income. And it is always possible that our town could declare that to taxable income. And so far they have not, but in the contracts we have with antenna providers, there is a clause that says should this trigger tax assessments, it will be the antenna providers who are responsible for paying it. But again, I think that I'm aware that some churches have faced tax liability for the ways in which they use their facility.
Which doesn't mean that it's not still worth it. I mean, in the situation I'm talking about, it was definitely still worth it. But yeah. It was just stuff we had to figure out.
Yeah, and I have started being very careful about phrasing that I use, because when I first got here, I was talking about, oh, it's not that we're a church that has community groups in, we're a community center that, you know, also does church. And then once I started understanding about the tax ramifications, I stopped doing that.
A wise policy.
Well, and I'm interested too in those areas of who gets discounts and who gets free use, and you know, and who pays the regular rent, and how and who makes those decisions. We opened up our space too in the wake of the Black Lives Matter movement to a local community group, and we haven't faced it yet. But I imagine, you know, the climate change group coming and saying, "Well, shouldn't, rather than paying rent, shouldn't you open? This is just as important an issue," you know, those kinds of things that come up. And we also sometimes have members of the congregation who are very involved in these community groups, and our social justice team is sort of working with these groups, and it becomes a little murky about who's in and who's out and who pays rent. And You know, so far we're navigating those, but I don't feel like I have a really clear line with any of those.
Rod, that is exactly the same issue that we're trying to deal with right now. I don't see in this situation here that the concern is not that we have to be equally, if you know, we open our building to some very liberal partisan cause, we have to also do it for conservative. That's probably not going to happen. But our big problem is that for all of the groups that want to rent, they all have members of the fellowship that are, you know, very active. And so in the past building rental policy, before I came, and I've only been here 2.5 years, members, as long as you had a member that would sponsor an event, in other words, they would have a key, they would do set up and clean up, and they would be responsible. Then if there was a membership person to do that, then the group didn't have to pay anything. So no matter what it was. So as you might imagine, people are still, even though that was like 5 years ago and we have a new policy, people still go under that assumption that as long as they have somebody that can do that stuff, then it should be free. And it's just, it's gotten very, very touchy. People don't, we don't have, it's not an affluent community here by any stretch. And so even the rental amounts, you know, people will say, well, that's, you know, we can't afford that. So, yeah. So any experience that other folks have had in trying to, it's really talking to membership. and trying to find out what is fair, and also, you know, that tension between we have financial interest as well as, of course, we want to promote and support these groups and what they're doing.
In one previous church I was in, we navigated that a little bit with saying that if the group had sponsorship by a committee, not by an individual member, but if it was sponsored by a committee, so social justice being the number one, but that entailed certain responsibilities out of that group. They were actually sponsoring it. So I don't know. It's a hard one. Everywhere I've ever been, it's been a hard one.
It helps us to have a parish administrator who is a junkyard dog and who knows that people are going to get angry with her and she's going to have to hold the line. And my job is to back her up and assure her that I will defend her if she gets a lot of back talk. But yeah, there's plenty of back talk.
People expect that they're going to get something for their pledge, and often that includes, you know, access to the building for you know, things that are important to them. You know.
Yeah, but they also want to be freeloaders, and you know, is it all right if we take 50 folding chairs to our house for an event on the weekend? And you know, we've had to establish policies that stuff doesn't leave the building in general. Because when we had more of a fellowship kind of culture, people thought that this was their clubhouse and they could use it any way they wanted. And that's not the way it is anymore.
So the key is, in a lot of this, is just going through the process of building up those policies and the, you know, the handbook and getting the congregation to give it authority, you know, that when you point to the handbook, you say, well, that's not the way we do things here, that they respect that, you know, and not just go, well, let's make an exception because you know me. And, you know, but that's a stage of development for, you know, a lot of places, is that they haven't worked their way toward that yet. So, Joanna, you could be selling your little building use policy book.
Yeah, I definitely want a copy of that. But it sounds like we're talking about places where policies may not actually clarify.
Yeah, haven't been developed yet. You know. And you're still in the improvised stage of policies, right?
No matter how good your policies are, there are always going to be gray areas. And that's where you have who's responsible for making the calls when there's gray areas, and just go with it.
Oh, that's a good question, because what has happened, in the past, again, the old policy was that the board would consider every request. The board. And so now we have a building use manager that is not paid a salary but gets a commission, a percentage of the paying rentals. So only really more difficult ones get to decide. But this issue of who, especially when it involves membership, of who can rent and for how much, that I'm sure is going to be a board issue. Is that, are there other people who decide? I mean, besides the, is it up to the minister, or is it up to Buildings and Grounds Committee, or in other people's experience, who's the decider?
Okay, so we're actually right in the middle of this, and it had been our facilities team was charged with doing this, and it's time for us to take a look and see what the market rate is and see if our rental rates are, you know, appropriate. And our facilities team said, yeah, we really don't want to do that. And so with my administrator and with our administrator and myself, we're about to sit down, see what all the work needs to be done. Is this ideally it'll be something that our administrator can do. And we're really lucky because her interests lie in this. But the other thing that we're looking at doing is setting up a short-term task force, finding some people who understand real estate in the area and having them come up with it.
I'm like Patrick in that I'm currently serving a church which is unusually used to the minister making some of these decisions. They do exist. These churches really do. And so we went through this in the last year of establishing some rental procedures, including how much we're charging an hour. And this is in a church which has been a destination church for weddings. If you've ever been in Church of the River in Memphis, you know, the 15-foot plus high windows in front of the sanctuary that overlook the Mississippi River. We do a lot of weddings, and it's sometimes feels like the building serves more as a wedding chapel than as a worship space. But they're used to charging for those things, but we had to clarify when were we going to charge for also having the sexton present and how much, and starting a deposit for cleaning issues should somebody make a mess, or we'd return it if they don't. So those kinds of details were actually largely left to me, And one thing you can do, even if that's not the culture in the congregation you're serving, is come up with a suggestion and send it to the board and say, you know, and invite them to sign off on or make adjustments to this, and at least get that process started, lighting a fire under them.
I'm not sure that I understand. You'd ask the board to do what?
Like come up with a proposal for what the rental procedures would be, how much you'd be charging, if there was questions that you were trying to answer, like when do we or do we not rent to partisan groups, what groups do we discount and what groups do we charge full amount, you know, come up with a proposal for that. And you know, basically write it up as if this is what the policies and procedures would be if I was setting them, and then just give that to the board. Just say, will you approve this? And in some churches, it would probably go pretty straightforward. In other churches, it would they'd pick it apart like crazy. But it starts the conversation.
Yeah, it seems like the board is pretty hands-off here and is happy to leave it to ministry to decide these things.
Reserving the right to criticize all decisions.
Exactly. And now tell us why that caused such problems. This is a little off topic, but a question that has come up recently is about a member, or actually not a member yet, a friend of the congregation doing a yoga class here and having a suggested donation. Has anyone run across that or had experience with it or caution signs? Or it seems like, I mean, we've just never had that happened here before, and I know some congregations do it, and that is not a good enough reason for me to do it.
Yeah.
Who gets the donation? I mean, is the donation going to the yoga instructor or is it going to the church?
The idea is that it would go to the instructor. That's what's been proposed.
So we had something similar happen about a year ago, and that was where we determined that whenever anyone comes to us, whether they're a member or not, that it's kind of like, you know, standing on the boat, one leg on the dock and one leg on the boat, you have to make a decision. And so when they come to us, they have to decide, am I coming to you because I want this to be a church enrichment activity, in which case I, the person bringing it, will get no profit from it, or am I bringing this to you as a renter, in which case I will get profit? And we had to kind of talk through some people with that because, you know, no, I'm a member, but I should also get profit. Nope, in that case, you're a renter. And so we just had to make it really clear cut. If you get profit, you're a renter. If not, it's a church enrichment and, you know, activity.
We went through that in Worcester too. And I just became aware of the fact that there's a pretty class-based assumption that people are going to teach a yoga class. You know, we had somebody coming in who wanted to do, you know, ballroom dancing, and things that would enrich the church, that would be good for the church, that were being done by people who were very friendly to the church or even members of the church, that the fact that they were making some small amount of money from it was somehow that wasn't right. That, you know, that seemed like a fairly class-based assumption about how people do that kind of work. I was, you know, we ended up we ended up in some of those cases kind of like, yes, you can collect money, you can make money. We do expect to get some kind of donation out of the deal as well. And people were good about that, you know. But it wasn't that you're a renter per se, but that you had the skill and you were offering it to the church, but your time was still, you still were in the position in life that you were selling your time, and that we couldn't assume that that would be ignored. That was just, yeah, you know.
And that was one of the ways that this was presented, was, you know, to take a look at some of those class-based assumptions. And I'm just wondering, as far as accounting, I mean, we had a financial review recently, and one of the things that we were affirmed on was that all the money that changed hands within the congregation was accounted for by our accounting system. So in that case, would all the donations come to the church and then filter back out to the person? Or, I mean, it seems to raise a lot of questions. Mm-hmm. That I'm not sure about.
I'm not sure I'd argue one way or the other on it as a hardcore policy. It's just that I began to get uncomfortable with it, you know. My old Puritan thing started itching on that, going, well, of course nobody would ever want to make any money on the church. I mean, aside from the fact. But
well, and also it brings up the question of what classes are worthy of getting donations, or is it not based on the class but based on the person's need? Or, you know, I mean, it just, I've already spent way too much time with this issue, and I'm just wondering if what we're trying to address is, this is not the best way to address it. And it also brings up the idea of programming that happens outside the operating budget. Like, we think this is really important, we should put it in the budget. Or if we didn't, then we're asking the congregants to pay for it outside of the budget. And, you know, I just go round and round, and I'm wishing I could just hand this off to
Well, we're coming up on 4 o'clock. You know, we can stay here in this virtual room as long as we want. I think we had it scheduled for an hour. So if people are ready to leave and move on, that's fine. If people want to stay and talk some more, we can do that. So
I'm going to need to go ahead and sign off.
Yeah, I'd just like
Thank
to make the one kind of summary comment of that connection with mission being something that is overridingly important in making the determinations about who's in and who's out, who pays and who doesn't, who, all of those decisions, you know, if we can keep that focus on that mission point, I think some of it at least becomes a bit more clear. All of it doesn't, mm-hmm. but at least some of it does.
I think that our sense of mission is clarifying that, you know, a lot of the times when we, seemed like when I was in my active ministry, that in actual fact, our mission was that we should be a busy church, that we should have lots of programming going on, lots of things going on that would be interesting to people. So, which was, you know, a pretty bland vision of mission, and not, you know, really kind of attractional church kind of model. And I think that mission is getting more clear as the times get more clear.
Murky,
but clear, you know. Yeah, it's murky, and so we have to be clear because it's murky.
Well, I have just one last question. I'm just wondering, sure. In anybody's policies or unspoken or formal policies, whether there's a in terms of the mission, if there are special exceptions for social justice events and groups, like that, is that a different, in a different category?
Is that differentiated in your policy, Joanna?
Well, ours is divided into nonprofits and for-profits, and so it generally falls under there. But we also, I mean, I'm really lucky that we have a board that wants nothing to do with this, and so it's really up to the administrator and myself. So, you know, we have a lot of leeway. You know, I can go, sure, let them have a room.
Yeah, I'll be contacting Joanna for a copy of that, but it does sound somewhat similar. Our policies specifically authorize me and the administrator to make those kinds of decisions. She sometimes makes them. The more challenging they get, the more she likes to have me make them. And with the president being someone who's officially available for consultation, so that if it gets a little knotted or there's something complex, we'll talk. But you know, even there are pitfalls. I discovered that we had given a discount to someone who perhaps we'd have given a discount to anyway for a Roman Catholic woman priest's ordination. But it was done through the auspices of his wife, who is still attached to Catholicism somewhat. It's all, there are people involved. It gets messy.
Right. I'm out of here, everybody. Thank you, okay. Tom and everybody.
Thank you all.
Thank you.
Thank you all.